you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm your guest. I'm not your guest. I'm Mickey Desai, the host of this episode. My guest is Dan Shepling. Dan is the creative director and president of Kapauza. Dan, how are you?
I'm well. I think, is this my podcast now? Am I interviewing you?
Sure. Let's do that. Absolutely. I'll be the guest.
Hi, this is our new podcast that we've invaded. It's a hostile takeover of this podcast.
That's brilliant. So Kapauza, you said this comes from a Simpsons bit.
There's a generic marketing lady in The Simpsons, and I just love her to death because she just says the most useless things. And she's talking about Bart and Lisa. They have a news program, and Lisa's like, what does Bart have that I don't have? And she's like, Bart has a special something. He has Zip, Zorp, Kapauza. And so now every company, if I ever form any other company, it's going to have to be some kind of Simpsons reference. Zorp is going to be the next one, and so on until I owe Matt Groening a bunch of royalty checks.
I love it. That's fantastic. So Kapauza is a creative agency. Is it media? Is it, can you expand on that? When you say creative agency, how do we explain that to people?
So the technical definition and the industry definition is full service creative agency, meaning we do everything on the creative spectrum from soup to nuts. So we do websites, we do branding, we do video, we do graphic design, any of those services that fall in the, around that, as well as campaign development, commercials. And now we do a lot more with Facebook media, and we do PPC stuff through that, through like Google. And so we're expanding our services to be more and more strategic, but originally we were just pure creative. And so the last couple of years, we've seen the advantage of being more, it's like, you can be as creative as you want, but, having a good strategy behind it certainly makes a heck of a difference.
That's cool. And, you know, I know obviously we're going to talk about the nonprofit angle today, but you don't work strictly with nonprofits. You work also with the corporate world as well, correct?
Correct. And we really view the nonprofit selfishly, the nonprofit area selfishly, as like a cleansing of our souls, because you can only do so many bank commercials where you start feeling bad about who you are and your chosen profession. And so, my partner and Sean Sutherland, our VP of marketing, I think that's his title now. We all just got title changes, and I'm trying to remember, keep everyone's in mind. But he really pushed in the beginning for us to work with nonprofits, and because they do good work. His wife works for a wonderful nonprofit, and they do good work, and you just feel good being part of it. And, you know, being part of a larger mission than, hey, we want more customers, we want more clients, we want, like, actually solving a problem and helping people. And so every time we see something in the world, our first thought is like, what can we do as a bunch of media artists, as a bunch of creatives? You know, our job is to make people feel a certain way about something. And we can help a lot in a lot of areas. And some of my favorite work we have ever done has been for nonprofits, just because, like, creatively, it's very rewarding, because the call to action there is a little bit more altruistic than just, like I said, we want to sell 20 more cars this month. And so, like, both have their positives and negatives, like both sides. We definitely work on both sides of the profit and for-profit and nonprofit. And so I think the biggest thing is that we try to find places where we can help, no matter what, no matter if it's profit or nonprofit. Just, you know, the nonprofit one is definitely feels better as you fall asleep at night.
Yes, there is that. That is true. Like what you said, your job is to make people, how did you say it? Your job is to make people feel something about what they're watching?
Yeah, it's advertising is incredibly subversive. And so we don't work on any political stuff for that exact reason, just because it's very... we can manufacture any feeling you need to manufacture about anything. I can make you fall in love with a can of soda, and you know that's probably bad for your for health reasons.
Right.
And so you have to be careful. And so I feel like we do a good job at least asking ourselves, like, should we be doing this work, and are we helping the world here? And in some cases, they're just wonderful companies that we want to work with that they have really smart management. They have smart leadership. They have a good media plan. And then in other cases, it's just, like I said, like we just want to help the cause. And it's not that they're not smart, but sometimes their resources aren't as large as someone that is just purely for profit. You know,
when you take a look at the world of nonprofits, what do you think is wrong with the way they approach their advertising, with the way they approach their media in general?
Well, I think it's the same thing I would say for all advertising. It's not just nonprofits that have this problem. The assumption that everyone's going to care and that everyone is listening. And maybe for nonprofits, we feel that, like, well, I'm saying something important, they should care. Well, maybe. But we get hit all day, every day, with messages, with advertising. I think we see something like 7,000 ads a day or something like that. And it's some egregious number. And I think it's only going to get more, and it's only going to get more personalized. And so the assumption that we're listening, the assumption that anyone's listening, just because you're raising money to help adolescents fight cancer, doesn't mean that people are going to listen to you do that. So you still have to be interesting. The rules still apply to you. You still have to tell an interesting story. I think it's a lot easier for you to tell an interesting story simply because the core story itself is more interesting. But yeah, you still have to move me to do something.
Well, and this is a slight departure from the topic, but I'm remembering something that I think it was Douglas Adams in one of his books. He said that television doesn't really bring a show to an audience as much as it brings an audience to an advertiser.
Correct.
It doesn't matter if it's television or radio or anything else. I mean, websites certainly do this. Websites certainly bring you web content, but in terms of running something as large as Facebook, the product is not the content. The product is the people, and they're basically selling attention spans to advertisers.
If you're not paying for it, you're the product.
So how do we harness that wisdom, even though it's sort of dark, right? How do we harness that wisdom into taking a look at how nonprofits should present themselves in this, I'm going to characterize it as a roiling sea of attention grabbing material?
Outside views really help. And this is why agencies exist in the first place. Because if you're spending all day, every day, trying to, for example, raise awareness for indigenous communities and people to take care of rainforests, you're going to think it's the most interesting thing in the world. And you're going to almost be blind to the points that someone else would be interested in. And so an outside perspective, whether it be an agency, whether it be a friend that'll tell you the truth, or you kind of have to learn to disassociate yourself a little bit. And it can be really, really hard to stand back and say, who cares? But like, say it in a positive way, not in a dismissive way. Who cares about this? Who exactly are we talking to? Why should they care? Why is this important? We did a video a couple of years ago for Almond Cancer Fund. And it was like one of my favorite things that we've ever done. And what they do is they raise support and money for adolescents with cancer. And so there's childhood cancer, and then there's cancer for adults and seniors, but no one was really watching the folks, my age. And so we they had almost nothing for a budget, but they had a great story. We shot it on a cell phone and we built the cell phone into the story. And it's a really powerful message about like, hey, this could happen to you. Like just because you're 20 doesn't mean you're invincible. Like get a checkup, like get involved and stay involved in your health. And so like, but we can do that with a cell phone. And we can do that as an outsider, thinking about what is interesting to something is the same thing that would interest us. So it's easier for an agency to come in and say, this is your angle here. This is the thing that people are really going to enjoy or really be inspired by. But if you're inside it is much harder. It is much harder. And it gets the same way for us, especially when we're doing commercials. If we're doing like a comedy commercial, you know, through the script and then the boards and then the shooting and then the poster, the editing and then the post, you know, you've seen the thing 9,000 times and you just look at it and you're like, is this still funny? Like, I don't even know any, I don't even know anymore. So that's why honest friends, like, yeah. Get yourself some brutally honest friends.
In order to be able to tell the effective story, that's something you should not do internally, right? Because you don't know if you're reaching your audience that way. Is that what you're saying?
If you can afford it, if you have the resources to bring in an outside perspective. But if you don't, you know, you can still, people have a really good, because we see so many ads and because we're so indoctrinated in what good advertising is, all of us watch the Super Bowl and we're pretty accurate with our critique. Oh, that's funny. Oh, that's not for me. Oh, that's really good. And my favorite one was this one. Well, most likely everyone's going to have the top five favorites. And that means that we're all kind of playing on the same taste. And so it can be done. You just have to kind of really think about like, okay, I'm from Iowa. I'm 54 and I'm looking to get involved in a particular issue. What is gonna make me stop scrolling and read, or what is gonna make me stop reading and lean in? There's a big thing about ads, you know, they have to have a quality of leaning in, and so you scroll past it, or you flip past it, or it's on the TV, and it gets you to look up for a second, and you kind of lean in just a little bit, and that's all it takes. And so it certainly can be done. And there's a lot of wonderful places that do a lot of things internally. It's just a lot harder. And we've seen, you know, internal agencies, even in huge, huge brands that have very, very smart people behind it. I think everyone remembers that Kylie Jenner Pepsi ad that was done by the internal agency. And that's the danger of it, being kind of blind to how your message is coming across to someone that's not involved in the creation of the message can be tough.
I have several questions I want to ask you. And one is, can you provide an example for the nonprofit world? You mentioned the Kylie Jenner ad, but have you seen nonprofit messaging, nonprofit branding go wrong? And can you provide an example of that?
I've never seen it go that wrong. Mm-hmm. Usually nonprofit folks aren't quote unquote tone deaf because they're so familiar with the nomenclature of their particular issue. I remember we worked with Rights and Resources and we made a really, really great edit of how Indigenous people are better caretakers of protected lands than protected lands are. It actually got shared by Leonardo DiCaprio, which was cool. So now wow. I can tell people I worked with Leo. I call him Leo, but you can call him Leonardo.
Sure.
But yeah, I've never seen, and went through that process. They really informed us, the proper way. It's Indigenous peoples. It's not tribes. It's not this. And just knowing the proper way to speak about an issue is usually what makes a nonprofit special. And so we learned a lot about the rainforest and how Indigenous people are protecting that. And so you're very familiar with an issue. So being tone deaf is much less likely. What is more likely is that you're just boring. And that is where it goes wrong, where it's an interview with all the people involved and they're talking about their mission and why this is important to them. And sometimes it resonates and sometimes it doesn't. But most of the time, it's just, it's a well-produced about page is what it kind of comes across as. And I don't mean like, I don't mean to sound like mean, like, oh, they're just boring. I just mean like, it's not content that's going to grab anyone by the lapels, pull them in, and really think to the person reading or watching this and think, you know, how are we going to turn them on intellectually? And so that is what I see a lot more of that. I've never seen something like super tone deaf, because they're usually way more familiar with an issue than I would be, because that's their thing. You know, there are some great places that they just do great work. And we've seen recently with the Texas abortion laws, there's been some great art that has come out of that, like a lot of artists making posters and a lot of creative people coming together to spread a message. And like, you don't need an agency for that. Like there's a lot of great artists working on that kind of problem, and it's in the cultural zeitgeist. And so, all kinds of routes to go to be more interesting, but the majority is like, I feel like a lot of nonprofits may pull punches, if that makes any sense. Like sometimes, like if you're dealing with, we work with Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and that's a really hardcore issue. And so they work with people that were victims of drunk driving accidents, and some of it's just really hard stuff, and you can't pull those punches because that's real. And the truth is always interesting. The real truth, not the manufactured, you know, corporate truth. That's real. The polished truth. You want the real truth. And, you know, when we were writing the Allman Foundation spot, we spent a lot of time on cancer subreddits and reading about people afflicted with that disease. And it was real emotional. And it was just like, you spend 8 hours, 10 hours reading about stories where people are about to get married and they have a lump, and next thing they know, they're off on this journey. And you don't pull any punches from that, because that's real life. And people recognize that. People, we're really smart. We're really savvy, creative content consumers, just because we see so much of it. And the audience is not dumb. Like, they know if you're pulling punches and if you're not telling the truth. Like, and it's hard to do that tastefully. Like, how do you be honest while being tasteful? How to be honest while being interesting? And these are the things that we talk about. And I've been doing it for a long time, and I'll say it's not easy. It's just, you know, it takes a lot of work.
Right. I think you're talking about boiling down a brand essence, if I'm not mistaken. You're mm-hmm. trying to get, but you said something a second ago, which I thought is something of an oxymoron that I wanted to talk about, which is to turn someone on intellectually, mm-hmm. which has everything to do with the presentation of information in an effort to get someone to feel something. But mm-hmm. but intellect, in my mind, is sort of immune to feelings, right? Intellect is the part of you that's pure logic and just wants the facts. Thank you. But to turn someone on intellectually, clearly there's an overlap here that I'm missing. Can you shine a light on it for me?
Well, I think it's all overlapped. I don't think our brains are quite as walled off and quite as black and white as we'd like to think. To turn someone intellectually, to me, it's like you kind of root an idea in their head. And just to talk about rights and resources. So I was like, oh, you know, federally protected land and protected land by government sounds like a good thing. Like, right. That's the way we're supposed to do it. It's protected, has the name protected land. It's like clean coal, has that branding where it's just like, this is probably fine. And you learn more about it and something happens in your brain. Once you get past the, why am I interested in this? And then you learn about an issue. And then it's a knowledge that kind of lights up a part of your brain where you're like, oh, now I know that Indigenous peoples are doing a better job based on all this that I've seen and they've showed me and they've explained to me. We did some forestry stuff not too long ago. a couple of years ago, and it was and the forester was talking about, oh yeah, forest fires are good. And I'm like, excuse me? And it's like, yeah, it's good every once in a while to burn out some of the dead leaves, and like nature will do that. Now there's the bad ones, and the controlled burns are part of the forestry process. And that was one of those things where I'm like, had the same reaction. I was like, what? I thought forest fire usually means bad.
Bad, right?
They're like, no, in a controlled setting. And I'm sure there's much more nuance there that I'm missing. But to, you know, we remember everything based on an emotion. Every memory you have is probably based on some kind of emotion, from your first memory to Christmas to holidays to birthdays. And so it's all tied to an emotion. And our job is to find that emotion and wrap an idea in an emotion. And so an idea of we should do some cleaning of the forests. Well, here's an idea that's wrapped in emotion. It's a Trojan horse. And it's getting really deep, but like, it's like a Trojan horse. Like it's a intellectual idea wrapped in emotion, and it's buried in your brain. And then once it gets in through emotion, the idea kind of comes alive.
You use the feeling to spur a sort of change in behavior, which is a call to action. So the feeling of desperation, or the feeling that I should conserve a forest, turns into a donation, or turns into a volunteer trip to go clean up a forest or something.
Yeah, it turns into, well, what can I do about this? And that's where the nonprofit comes in. And that's where the handoff from us and our work to the nonprofit, we get someone to go, okay, I agree this is a problem, or this is an issue, or this needs my support. What can I do? And we've all had it happen. To all of us, from political ads can do it. We've all seen it with different brands. You know, I have a Mac, I have a PC, I have a Samsung, I have a BMW, I have a Toyota. Like, we're all wrapped in intellects, wrapped in emotion. And so we all of these brands, they've spent billions and billions of dollars to manufacture a single emotion with almost all of their logos. And when it's done well, you can sum up that Coca-Cola sells happiness. That's what they're trying to get across. Now, whether it's true or not, I have no idea. I'm more of a coffee person. But, you know, I know that from the outside that Coke is trying to sell me happiness. And so for these nonprofits, it's just like, what are you trying to sell me? Because you are selling me something, because you need me to do something. What are you trying to sell me that's not just peace of mind?
Yeah. And I think most nonprofits would simply say a better world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a better world is a great way to sell it, but a better world for whom? And a better world for it, like, what does it matter? Because people, like, you know, biologically speaking, I think we're all probably inherently a little selfish. And it's this like, we have our world and we have what affects us and what touches us, but we can experience and be touched by things so that it's now part of our tribe. It's now part of our biological circle. And so even though this may be, you know, 10,000 miles away in a rainforest, we still can really, really care because we see, gosh, they're just like me. Yeah, they're going to work. They have their kids. They have their worries. Where are they? What are they having for dinner tonight? And it's now I see myself in them. And that's what a lot of ads try to do as well, is try to see myself in them.
So we're rapidly running out of time, but I wanted to touch on something real quick. What do you see as trends that are working in today's advertising environment? What works and what doesn't?
I would say video is and has been the king for the last, I'd say, 10 years, and will continue to be the king. It really, you know, we can run 50 print ads and run one video, and it just gets you on all the levels, right? Like, you have the people that like to hear things, the people that like to see things. Like, how do people learn? They're visual learners, they're audio learners, and kinetic learners, I think, is the third one. But you can't really do that in a video yet. But you're able to do so much with it. You can place it in so many places. You can run ads. You can send it out in a newsletter. You can play it before an annual meeting. You know, annual reports are really interesting, but a video is really, if you want to grab somebody by the lapels and kind of shake them into, hey, this is really important, a video is always better.
And you're saying that this can be accomplished with actually something as simple as a smartphone.
Yeah.
But likely, if you're going third party to get an advertisement or getting some messaging done, third party's probably not going to use a smartphone unless it's directorially called for, correct?
Well, it depends. It depends. So when we used it, there's a director named Steven Soderbergh, and he does like all the Oceans movies, and he shoots everything on iPhones nowadays. And that's just kind of his thing. There's some great horror movies and great content being made with a cell phone. And if any of us has spent more than 10 minutes on TikTok, you'll see that there's great content being made on a cell phone. Phones these days.
I'm sorry, man. I have a hard time thinking of TikTok as being a source of great content. I'm just.
No, man, you're missing out. It's hilarious. Really? I try to stay up on whatever's popular, and there was a point where it was just people dancing, and now it's just funny. Like there's a guy that will cut himself into famous movies, and he'll talk to, say, like Bruce Willis, and then it'll cut to Bruce Willis, and then he'll talk to Bruce Willis. It's really well done. And so it exists, and I wouldn't shake away any platform. I would say wherever people are congregating and making great content, that's a place you should be, or at least think about. But yeah, I mean, you know, it really depends. I mean, sometimes it's budgetarily constrained on what equipment you want to use. You know, of course, we love to doing a big shoot with a lot of cameras and a lot of, you know, 40 person crew, and you got jibs and dollies and actors. Like it's great. It's the best way to make something. You know, that's why most movies are made that way, and most shows are made that way. There's a reason. But you can get away with making something on a phone if it's very truthful. And phones have this wonderful kind of truth serum kind of feeling where you're like, hey, this is honest. They don't have 40 people. They don't have a dolly. They don't have cranes and lights. And so, you know, playing into that honesty, talking right into the phone as the founder of the nonprofit, or talking to some of the people that work there, that to me will do more than a very polished about us video, because you're like, well, what was edited? Or a very polished testimonial, because you're like, well, what was edited down to make the testimonial as powerful as possible? Whereas a phone, it's seemingly, even though it is edited, it feels unedited because it's shot with a lower quality. And we're so used to, you know, that 40 person crew kind of look. But when you shoot it with a phone, there's an honesty there. And there's a rawness to it. And it can work really, really well. You just, you know, a good script, and a good idea, and good people in front and behind the camera. You can do a lot with the phone.
Any parting shots of wisdom for our audience today? Lessons learned, takeaways that our nonprofit clients can put to work immediately?
Yeah, I think the thing I kind of say to everyone is, you know, if you can't hire an agency and you need to do all this internally, figure out what you're most comfortable with. If you are a writer, write blogs. If you're kind of funny, write tweets, or like small snapshots of ideas, write tweets. If you like photographs, do Instagram. If you're generally sociable, do Facebook. If you do social media, everyone tries to do all of social media, and it can be, it can be a real problem if you have like 10 accounts and no one's updating it. I would rather see one account that you own, like you're the Twitter account, or you're the Facebook account, or you're the Instagram. And if you like photos, use Instagram. You know what? Like, be honest with what you like doing, because you'll just do it. It's really hard to make yourself write a blog if you feel like it's writing a book report every time. But if you really like to write, you'll crank out blogs on a Saturday afternoon, and they'll be good, and people will read them. And so, like, that quality usually comes from what do you enjoy doing. Nobody makes good stuff because they had to. They made good stuff because they wanted to.
Yep, that's right. Excellent stuff. If a listener wanted to be in touch with you and learn more about Kapauza, the work that you do with nonprofits, how would they find you?
Sure. Our website is kapauza.co, K-A-P-O-W-Z-A.co. I am Dan at kapauza.co. You can also hit up Sean, S-E-A-N, at kapauza.co. And yeah, even if it's just to talk, like how we could help, give some advice, we do that all the time. And especially for nonprofits, we love to do it.
Awesome.
So we love talking to nonprofits.
Dan, thank you for being my guest today. Hopefully we can do another one of these again in the future.
Yeah, no problem. I'd love to. Thanks so much.
And that should do it.
I was going to say, you want to record this now?
Should I?
The whole thing was a rehearsal. And now you ready to do the, you should do that with guests. Like, I was thinking of recording this. All right. Now that we're good. Now that we're warmed up. People would be like, what? You're like, what? Excuse me?
That's hilarious. Okay, so I'm totally leaving this in, by the way.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.